Good morning.
Good morning, Char.
How are you, Steve?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. Good.
Anything new on Dennis?
Mild weather and enjoying the. Oh, I'm sorry.
Anything new on Dennis?
Just that he's improving.
Betty has arrived.
Didn't look this morning at Steve or Betty for Dennis's report, but late last night when I went to bed, it was improving. So
good.
We're just praying it's on the mend and counting on that.
Yep.
Absolutely glad to hear that.
Yes, yes, so were we. I trust you guys had a great weekend.
Yep.
Yep, it was a... Has arrived.
Good morning.
Hi, Sha.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Good, buddy. I got into the a little, just a tiny bit of the book, Light, Medicine of the Future, by Jacob Lieberman.
Oh, yeah?
And, oh, my goodness, I got on the phone before I got, well, barely into the first chapter. I don't always read the introduction, the acknowledgments aren't the greatest on my list, but the preface, the foreword, and the genie.
Has arrived.
Good morning, Jeannie.
Good morning.
And so anyway, I started reading it, and I got, how far did I get? I got into the preface, which is after the foreword, and then the acknowledgments, and then the introduction, or vice versa on those last two. Yeah, introductions.
Mary Lou has arrived.
And I'm talking about Light, the Medicine of the Future, book by Jacob Lieberman. You guys may all want to add that to your library.
Nancy?
Has arrived.
Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning, how are you?
Good. And you may all want to add that book, Light, Medicine of the Future, to your library based on just what I've done on the first couple of pages, few pages here. I'm just going to highlight this one little bit here, and he says, my first patient, my mom, had recently lost the vision in her left eye due to an optic nerve disease. The frightening aspect of this was that 25 years earlier, she had lost part of the vision in her, left eye, and the right eye from the same condition, and her mother had totally blinded by the same disease. Terrified at the dismal prospects, my mother submitted herself to 6 months of medical treatment by several top ophthalmologists in Miami, as well as the Bascom Palmer Eye Institute. With no improvement, she was told to adjust to her new condition, as nothing could be done for her. At this point, she could see only a few blurred fingers directly in front of her eyes and had totally lost her peripheral field of vision. My research told me that the color turquoise acts as an anti-inflammatory agent. Here we go with the inflammatory situation again. That is a consistent with disease, isn't it, guys? Mm-hmm. I had my mother look at a specific turquoise light in one of my instruments for 20 minutes per day. After 4 days, I began to measure an improvement in her eyesight. By the 11th day, she was emotionally uplifted, feeling much better, and beginning to see things on her sides. On the 20th day of treatment, she was able to read a 4-inch letter at 20 feet, a massive improvement, and had regained 80% of her peripheral field vision in her left eye. She also noticed a significant improvement in her right eye, which had been impaired for the past 25 years. From these miracles, obstacles evolved my life and the work presented in this book.
Who's the author, Cheryl?
Jacob Lieberman. He's the one that introduced the light.
I wasn't sure. Okay.
Yeah, at the convention. And I could not help but think of immediately the gal that visited her and her husband that visited us back in New York that has now not enough vision to most of the time even see the screen or read anything.
I wonder how that, that would work with, because my nephew has MS, but it's affected his eyes.
I don't know why not, because that's inflammation going on. I don't know what disease of the eyes you'd have to rule out.
I was just going to say, I'm assuming this full spectrum covers all those colors.
I'm sure it does.
Okay.
We will definitely learn more about it. And then I flip to another page. There's some color charts. I don't know exactly what all this stuff means yet because I've not done it. There's a couple charts, pencil or ink drawings. The first chapter is the human photo cell. But across, on one page it lists the different rays and it shows the length of the rays coming from the sun. And it's in an order, cosmic rays, gamma rays, X-rays, far ultraviolet rays, and then mid and near ultraviolet, and then violet. And violet was, I can't remember what they said about that. That was an outstanding one. Indigo, blue. And then the shortwave infrared, and then the infrared, and then the radio waves and electric waves. Electric waves are on one far side. And they've categorized them invisible and visible. And the invisible are the cosmic gamma X-rays, far ultraviolet, and the mid and near ultraviolet. And then the ones in the center are visible, and then it goes out the other way again that they're invisible. I mean, explains the whole cycle of night and day and the rhythm of life. And then there's another chart that says, this one's interesting, gradual and consistent exposure to sunlight yields decreased resting heart rate, decreased blood pressure, decreased respiratory rate, decreased blood sugar, decreased lactic acid in the blood following exercise, gradual consistent exposure to the sun yields. Okay. And then increased energy, strength, endurance, increased tolerance to stress, and increased ability of the blood to absorb and carry oxygen. That's all the things that are gradually increased or decreased, according to the, which way it's going to benefit us, to gradual and consistent exposure. And on the other side is gradual and consistent program of exercise yields the same things. Exactly the same thing. So, when he puts it on the same level as importance of exercise, as far as the effects that it can have on the body, I just found that really fascinating. This is going to be like another China study.
Mm-hmm. And the name of the book, again, was Light, Medicine of the Future?
Yes, just the word light at the top. And then,
uh-huh.
And it was, you could easily pick it up. Well, Blue Ribbon has it, Focus on Growth, I know, put a good-sized shipment of it in. Copyrighted in 1991. He was born, Lieberman, to give his age, he was born in 1947, so he's...
A mere child.
Yes, 5 years younger than we are, Nancy. Sitting you in the same bracket there.
Exactly. 1997. Thanks for the reminder.
Pardon?
Thanks for the reminder.
Right.
Oh. Go ahead, one of you.
Sorry. The copyright of the book was 1991?
1991, yes, the original copyright.
Okay.
Anyway, I just, my goodness. Color plates in the middle. And I don't know the, you know, all the things behind that. Oh, and then it gives another chart. Lots of great charts that you can just glance at and know what they mean. Melatonin rhythm, and starts out as a newborn very low, and then it gradually goes up. And beginning of puberty is where it is the strongest, and then gradually tapers off.
And that's before puberty was starting at the age of 7 or 8.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you see the effects of all this stuff, don't you? I mean, negative and positive, but the negative, you know, I didn't even think about that one that had just been related recently.
I had my one and only trick-or-treater last night was 9, and she's Asian. She looked like a little girl. So it's not necessarily everybody. My gosh, you know, I can't imagine. It's just,
well, and you know, you could look at, this was McDougall's. He could look and tell by looking at them, a family, what generation they were in Hawaii because of what their diet would be, or look at their plates of what they were eating showed the, you know, the conditions of the body based on, you know, their food intake. So if they've stayed, like if they've got parents that are eating traditional, and their whole habitat is closer to their native land, then they're not going to show the signs that, you know, of what we're dealing with in this country.
Did I just read the average age of puberty here should be, was it 13?
Well, yeah, it's 17 in or the menstrual cycle is 17, or was in,
has arrived.
Where?
China.
17, that's really old.
Yeah, that's where it was.
Wow. Well, how much after you start getting boobs do you get your period? Do anybody remember?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly what that timing is. Does anybody know?
I don't know.
That's a medical term, you know.
Yeah.
Of course it is. Oh, I lasted for the day, and then I've thought about it every other day. I
did good, really good on Thursday, and I was absolutely amazed. And what really triggered me was starting from scratch how much you can incorporate. I had 39 foods
good.
On Thursday.
Wow.
I know I added a few more, but it didn't take me a week to get 100. I can guarantee you that.
In one day, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was. But it was, and some of them were, you know, total foods. I don't count what's on the package, if it's on the package, unless it's major, you know, just like a mixture of grains. I figured, well, that counts because there are whole grains that I've put together in that mixture, or major things in a recipe.
Oh, your oatmeal could be 10 right there.
Pardon?
Your oatmeal could be 10 right there.
You mean the mixed grains?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it could be, depending on, you know, how much you're including into it. But the things like when I made a recipe with the, I make the pad thai, and I mean, my gosh, I load a ton of different vegetables in there. That's why it takes me longer to cook, because I'm not just throwing one or two things together, like, you know, just steamed vegetables. If you rotate them every day and had totally different vegetables, you know, that would still be great. But I like the dishes that have a variety of things in it. And Denny always says to me, well, why couldn't you put this in? As I've said before. And I say, no reason not to. Sounds good.
One thing I did notice is that I, even though I didn't record the last couple of days, over the weekend. I was conscious of, I would add, oh, I'm going to put this in there too, you know, just to add, just to be conscious of variety and having different foods.
That's true. That was the same thing I was seeing over at Vance and Stacy's for dinner when we celebrated with the kids the what we do instead of them trick-or-treating, was a great fun. I mean, we had just a wonderful time, and she had set out a great big pot of chili, and I had one nice-sized spoonful in the bowl, and I'm sure it was meat. I don't think it was transitional product. Didn't have any problem with that. Didn't feel as good after I'd gotten some cheese on some Mexican food. We didn't make it home. As happens more often than not, when we eat out, it's because we just don't get back in time to have something, you know, to fix something or even have a leftover at home. We wanted to finish out our list. And didn't fare so well with the cheese that was on the Mexican. I could feel the reaction of that on my intestinal tract. And I didn't write this stuff down, but it was just definitely interesting. Oh, and the other one is the smoothie with the adds up really nicely.
Well, I just thought, right, went over my mind what I had in my salad last night. I had 12 things in there.
Yes, yes. Another good way of getting an assortment. And if you don't repeat the same assortment the next day, look how quickly you stack up a great variety. But see, that's going to come from obviously eating from scratch.
Yes.
And not starting out with something that's processed or packaged.
No, I had fresh sunflower seeds and chia seeds, which I included in the 12.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry?
The rest is all veggies.
Yes, and I've been rotating. I found my big bag of chia seeds, and I've been rotating the chia seeds with the flax seeds every other day, just the same as I do, you know, with the greens and so forth. So it isn't that difficult to get into the habit of it. It's just, you know, having a well-stocked refrigerator and the other things that you want to work on. Anybody else?
It was 100 foods in a week?
Yes, 100 foods in a week.
Okay.
Oh, 100 different foods in 1 week? I thought it was every day.
No, 100 foods in a week.
Yeah, I was thinking a day, too, and then I thought, no, I think that would be eating too much food, I think. Unless you have a flake of this and a flake of that.
I couldn't handle that challenge.
Yeah.
No, in a week, and that really is reasonable. Mm-hmm. And it, like I said, it definitely made me think more about the fresh and making sure to leave out the processed. I don't want to be looking at the list of all chemicals.
Oh, wait, I forgot. It was up to 13. I forgot to include tomatoes in my count.
Yeah, it's easy to forget one. And then I didn't repeat putting down any of the things from the previous day, so.
I had a lot in my salad last night. Dr. Oz this morning, by the way, started off. He's in Cleveland today, and you can call him and talk to him.
Really?
Yes, with Boyson. He started off his program, the number one secret to getting with
to getting laid
drink
off.
Drink water.
Eat off. No?
Oh, eat off.
Good try.
Mm. What was the question?
The number one secret to getting weight off.
Oh, weight off. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Exercise?
Nope.
No?
Actually, the audience got it.
Mm. We're not doing so good, are we?
Anybody else?
We're spoiled, that's why.
Breakfast.
Oh, breakfast, yes.
Eat like a king.
Well, just have something. I turned it off after that, but I think his point is that starts your metabolism going. I remember when I was on Weight Watchers 100 years ago, that was a big thing, that your furnace is shut down for the night, and you need to rev it up in the morning.
I can remember getting my blood work done one early morning, and my blood sugar was so low, she was concerned. She said, you're one that really needs to have something in it. Of course, since then, it's been better, you know, but this was probably 4 or 5 years ago, I remember. That stuck in my mind, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, that can, you know, be hypoglycemic, too.
Mm-hmm. And my mom always did a test. She did a test among her students when she taught school. The ones, or not a test, but just asked questions of them, who ate breakfast and who didn't. And
mm-hmm.
the ones who ate breakfast, she were more alert.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. She's a big breakfast person.
I was going to say, that's for sure. Our youngest son used to rush out without having much for breakfast or if anything. And when he was in middle school, and then... that was way back when, and we started him on the protein drinks in the morning. That was before Nican, but anyway. And the next year, he had science first thing in the morning, and the teacher says, wow, because he was really, you know, getting it where he hadn't before. So.
And so many dieters think, oh, I don't need the calories.
Yeah.
I'll start later in the day, and I won't eat as much. Ha-ha.
No, not true. You know, I think all or most of the schools now have a breakfast program for kids.
Right, yeah.
You don't get fed.
Well, you know, one of my many diet lives was way down, and that was don't eat if you're not hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wasn't hungry first thing in the morning. So that was then I'd skip breakfast because I wasn't hungry.
I used to say, and it was very true, that I didn't get hungry until I started eating. Yes, I also don't wake up hungry. Although, I remember when we were in Maine, he asked after maybe 3 or 4 days how many people, because you're not supposed to eat after dinner, which was at 5 o'clock, how many people are waking up hungry, and it's a good sign to wake up hungry.
Mm.
So if you're really going from 5 until whatever time you get up the next morning, that is a very long time.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
It is, and I used to be scared that I would be hungry and wake up during the night and eat before I went to bed. So we've all gone through a number of these different cycles, it sounds like,
mm-hmm.
how we've done it. And then the restaurant days, I would be up at 4 a.m. in the morning and not eat until I sat down at 11 o'clock for a break.
Mm.
You know, now I look at it and think, you know, boy, our bodies are forgiving in one sense there, that we're still around and
we're durable.
We are.
It's a good thing because we go through so many.
What did you, I was glad I didn't go get raisins like I was going to for trick-or-treaters because we didn't have a single one. What did some of you give out? Did any of you do anything special?
No, my husband had bought some chocolate. Well, I had bought him actually chocolate candy bars because he was supposed to take chocolate for his choir director a few weeks ago. And so we saved those, and we just had very good. And I did hand those out, but anyway.
Marty had about 4 pieces of candy in a pocket that he was that he gave out. And if we had more, I took out quarters. That's how few children we were expecting.
Wow. Now, we've had a few out here before, but boy, not this year. I think in usually mostly it was just the grandchildren coming over at some point. But
my former neighbor, who was a teacher, has kept a record of how many kids she has had forever. And I called her at 8 o'clock, and she said, I knew you were going to call me. I said, so? She said, we had to turn off the light at 7:30. It goes until 8. She said we had given out 175 pieces already, and we ran out of candy.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
Well, you're in a developed area.
Well, but we're at the end of the cul-de-sac. Who's going to come down here with just one light on?
Oh, right, but maybe, what, she's next door?
No, my former neighbor.
Oh, former neighbor. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I mean, nobody comes down here. That's why I was shocked to see these two kids. It was not the two kids who live in front of us. They didn't come. I don't think they were home. We've never had anybody put the two kids in front of us before. I sure wouldn't have walked all the way down here with just one light on.
Well, I observed the difference in the habits and the taste buds of the children because... she had a chocolate that was very decadent, a cupcake. She took a few bites out of it, and she says, anybody else want it? She said, I'm done. And others inhaled and were trying to sneak more. But, you know, she just is not, she does not have the taste, but she'll go for a chip before she'll go for something sweet.
How lucky.
Yes, I wish that to be the case. But
there are a few. I think females are much more inclined to eat sweets than males, although lots of men do, but I think percentage-wise, in my experience, it's more the females.
Oh, yeah, I do, too.
And there is a hormonal thing with that, they say.
Well, there's an addiction thing, I know.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You can't just have one.
Anybody try something new over the weekend?
I made a soup. What was that soup? I have to get my... before I can talk intelligently about it. It was delicious. It was out of the greens, delicious greens recipe book that I just got. Let me see if I can find it here really quick. It had collard greens. Oh.
Isn't that one that's on the Dirty Dozen?
Yes, it would. I'm sure it would be because all the greens pretty much are. Are there, I think the only reason you're not going to find some of them there is because they are not in the top 100 foods.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's cabbage potato soup.
Mm. Well, cabbage is not there. That's one of them that's not there.
Combination.
And it was interesting because you take cumin seeds and brown mustard seeds and you saute them a little bit, and then you add onions and water. And it has carrots, turmeric, potatoes. You have four carrots that are diced and four medium-sized potatoes that are diced. And
you want to give us that? That sounds really good.
It's really, really good. It's a satisfying and quick-cooking winter green soup, it says. And this serves 4 to 6 people. So you have a teaspoon of olive or canola oil, and I used my, what's the oil that?
Bath flour?
Yes, thank you.
Isn't that the one that they said was better?
Mm-hmm, hyaluronic safflower oil, yeah. A teaspoon of that, and so you heat the oil and you cook the cumin and mustard seeds, and there's a half a teaspoon of cumin seeds and a teaspoon of brown mustard seeds. I ended up putting a teaspoon of both.
Okay.
I read the recipe wrong, and I had already put the cumin seeds in, so.
Can I interrupt you, Jeannie? I missed the first two. Denny asked me a question, so.
Yeah, a half a teaspoon of cumin seeds and a teaspoon of brown mustard seeds. And you're going to cook those, it says, for 1 to 2 minutes until fragrant.
Some oil, sir.
Cumin was the, in some oil, you said?
Yeah, a teaspoon of oil. And I used my safflower oil. And then you're going to add 2 cups of diced onions and saute them until they're golden and soft, 10 to 15 minutes. And then you have 6 cups of water. You're going to add the water, carrots. Well, I need to tell you how many. 6 cups of water, 4 carrots diced, a half a teaspoon turmeric, and 4 medium-sized potatoes cut into 3/4-inch cubes.
4 medium potatoes?
Mm-hmm. And a teaspoon of salt, and I just put like a half a teaspoon of salt. I added a little more salt later because I thought it needed just a little kick, but I have that pink Himalayan salt that I'm trying. And so you add the water, carrots, turmeric, potatoes, and salt, and bring it to a boil. And then reduce the heat and simmer it covered for 20 minutes until the potatoes are tender. And then 2 cups finely shredded Savoy cabbage. That's the Napa cabbage, isn't it?
Yeah, or it's really close. Yeah, I think it.
It has like pearly edges on the edge.
Yeah, it is, but I think the Savoy is the round heads, and the Napa is the elongated.
Longer ones. Okay, well, I used the Napa.
I don't think it would matter. I mean, it's going to be close enough.
And I also had, I didn't have enough of that because I'd used some of that for the for a different recipe, and I had a regular head of green cabbage, and so I added that to it, too.
So 2 cups of finely shredded?
Uh-huh, cabbage, and then 2 cups of finely shredded collards.
I bet a little bit of red cabbage would really be pretty in there.
It would be. It would be really pretty in there. And so you're going to add the cabbage and cook covered for 10 more minutes. And then after 10 minutes, you add the shredded collards and cook for another 10 minutes.
Mm. Oh, each one separately.
Mm-hmm.
Huh, I would have thought the...
I thought it would have been the other way around.
I almost wonder if that's a misprint because the collards normally takes longer than the cabbage.
I was going to say it. Whether you get young ones or whether they're old, tough ones like my store carries.
Oh, okay.
You're right. Yeah, that makes sense.
That would make a difference. And then it had a little side note.
Has arrived.
For additional texture and protein, you can stir in 2 cups of cooked chickpeas along with the Savoy cabbage.
Mm.
And so I had, on the side, I had been cooking some chickpeas, and so I did that. I added 2 cups of chickpeas. And I cooked my chickpeas with some wakame, one of those seaweed things I had done before, and they come out so tender and delicious with that. Okay, so I added that, and then you, after you've added your collards, then you stir enough to break up some of the potatoes, season with salt, pepper, and cayenne, if desired. And I put pepper, and I did put cayenne, and I tell you, we ate some more of the soup last night, and it was spicy on the throat. We always like it because we talk on the weekend so much. It felt really good. But it was just enough, and I don't know how much I added because I shook it in there, you know. But it was really, really good.
That sounds really good, and that makes a nice big batch, right?
Yeah. It says serves 4 to 6, but we've eaten on it twice, and we still have one more probably bowl left.
Well, you look at those set amounts of cups
that
you've put in there. My gosh, that's a
6 cups of water, and then you've got all the veggies in the... And, you know, you could, again, you could add all sorts of things in and out. But it was just really a very pleasant, delicious soup and warming. Of course, we're going to be back up to 93 tomorrow.
I don't know that you need warming, huh?
Yeah, but we were a cool 82 yesterday. So.
All right. Well, we're in the 40s. That's not fair.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. Their weather.
I've still got a row of kale out there that I need to get in. So.
Mm.
I do, too. I dehydrated a bunch of it into crisp flakes. What was it? How did you guys do the kale chips? Somebody did kale chips, or you gave the recipe.
I have that recipe if you want it, if you need it.
It was just really...
Leave, it's in my recipe book. Keep talking, I'm going to look.
Okay, because it just sounded so easy when you did it, and I never got around to doing it. Once I do it, it'll stick with me. I probably wouldn't need the recipe from the sounds of things, but the note on it would be good.
And I had arugula. I bought a package of arugula. I just love that. I've been stuffing it in everything, putting it underneath whatever. I've loved it. And I took some little tomatoes. We got some at Costco, some of those Campari tomatoes. And I used some of the balsamic vinegar that I got from that gal at the market. Sprinkled that on it with a little bit of olive oil and some Greek seasoning. Oh, my goodness, and it's just delicious. So.
When you said safflower oil, Jeannie, I found that in several different brands that measured up to what
Roger
was staying at Whole Foods. Probably about the only thing I bought in there because I really get irritated when 50% plus is conventional and double to triple the price that I can buy it at the discount store.
Mm-hmm.
And you know it's come out of the same bag. You can tell by looking at the size of the chop and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
This is more than irritating.
Yeah, it is.
But, you know, there's a few things that I picked up, two or three things in there was it, and that was one of them that I went looking for, and I knew that by the time I ordered it, the weight would have added up to more than the savings would have been from any discount order house, so...
Here are here's the baked kale chips.
Okay.
A bunch of kale. Tablespoon of olive oil. Teaspoon of seasoned salt. You preheat the oven at 350. Line a non-insulated cookie sheet with parchment paper.
Non-insulated cookie sheet. This parchment, okay.
With a knife or kitchen shears, carefully remove the leaves from the thick stems and tear into bite-sized pieces. Interesting, if they don't wash it until after that. I would wash it first.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, probably because, well...
Then it says wash it thoroughly dry with a salad spinner.
You cut up the leaves?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tear, you said, didn't you?
Tear into bite-sized pieces.
Okay.
Then drizzle kale with the olive oil and sprinkle with the salt, seasoned salt.
And don't get too much seasoned salt, because...
It's bad, but that's me.
Yeah,
I would love that.
I was thinking there was, in one of the latest McDougal newsletters, I was thinking there was a recipe, but I haven't found it.
Bake until the edge is brown, but not burnt, 10 to 15 minutes. I think you have to watch it. And I also have an oven-roasted kale recipe here.
That would be good, too.
10 to 15 minutes, you said?
Yeah. I think it's important to watch because I think it burns quickly once it gets going.
It does.
Well, they sure dry fast in the dehydrator, I'll tell you.
I was going to say, they are delicious.
Here's another oven-roasted kale, 2 bunches of kale, 2 tablespoons olive oil, 2 to 3 large cloves of garlic minced, sea salt and freshly ground black pepper, and a tablespoon of toasted sesame seeds.
Yum, that would be good.
Mm-hmm.
1 tablespoon. Let's see, what was before the tablespoon of?
Sea salt and freshly ground black pepper.
And where is it? Toasted sesame?
1 tablespoon toasted sesame seeds.
How much garlic was it?
2 to 3 large cloves minced.
Oh.
Then you preheat to 375. Rinse the kale and pat dry thoroughly. See, this does it the other way. Remove and discard the thick ribs, although I was using them in the smoothie. And roughly chop your leaves. Pat leaves dry again. Toss with the olive oil, garlic, salt, and pepper in a large bowl. Spread on a large rimmed baking sheet. The kale does not need to be in a single layer because it'll shrink when it cooks.
Yeah, I saw that with the dehydration the same way.
Mm. Bake 15 to 20 minutes, stirring every 5 minutes or so until the leaves are tender, crisp on edges, and slightly browned.
15 to 20 minutes.
Stirring every 5 or so.
Yum.
And then sprinkle with the sesame seeds before serving.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good, too.
Mm-hmm.
I have a little in this Green's book. It says just some basic kale variations that you could saute 2 minced garlic cloves and 2 teaspoons of olive oil. Add the cooked kale. Okay, so this is cooked.
So they've steamed it?
Yeah. Plunge the kale in cold water, loosen any dirt. Add a big, if you notice there's any gray-green aphids on the kale, add a big pinch of salt to the water and swish again. Any dirt or sand should sink to the bottom and the aphids should come off.
Hmm. Well, that's protein, isn't it?
Yeah. They don't eat much. Well, they might eat much. I don't know. Anyway, they're usually on the underside of the leaves. Check carefully. And then lift the kale out of the water. If the water is dirty or there's sand on the bottom, dump the water out, rinse the bowl, repeat the process. Wow. And then you cut, you know, take rib side up. Boy, they get really detailed here. Chop or tear the kale into bite-sized pieces. Bring the water to boil in a large skillet that has a tight-fitting lid. And they're using 3/4 pound of kale and 2 cups of water and a pinch of salt. Add the prepared kale, return water to a boil and cover. Cook on high 4 to 5 minutes until it's tender.